Welcome to Art Waves. I'm Bernadette Rule, and tonight my guest is Jennifer Kay. Jennifer Kay is an artist, designer, communicator, arts manager, and consultant. She brings an understanding of the arts from a variety of perspectives as a leader, manager, practitioner, teacher, and champion. To help build the impact of the arts, Kay combines this understanding with well-developed skills in exhibition development and design, graphic/media arts, communications, group facilitation and leadership, community development, consultation, and program development. Welcome to Art Waves, Jennifer Kay.
Thank you.
You're going to have to help me unpack all these things that you do that your biography mentions. Which came first? How did you start with all this?
Well, I mean, if you go, you know, way back, I would say that, you know, I grew up in a household that had a real appreciation for the arts. My parents, you know, they really valued literature, classical music, etc. So it was a house in which it was clear to me that the arts were something important. But it also was a household where we didn't actually do any of the arts. It's an interesting thing. It was sort of like it was there for, you know, to be appreciated and had value, but it was for other people to do.
Ah, okay. So nobody in your family had ever been an artist?
No. I think I had a distant cousin who played the banjo in sort of small towns in England, performing, like entertaining people, but that was about it.
Very interesting. So Jennifer Kay, when did you begin dabbling in art?
Well, I would say, you know, certainly in grade school and then more so in high school. So I was always in theater productions. I always enjoyed that. And, you know, I think that probably started mostly because I could memorize the lines. And then, you know, but then that grew. And while I was in high school, I actually did a couple of productions with Bimbrook Little Theater. That's quite a while ago.
Okay, but you started out your artistic life as an actor.
I would say so, yeah. Acting and writing, those were probably the two most important things for me.
And what were you writing? Were you writing plays?
Yeah, I wrote a couple of plays, poetry. My high school, I went to Saltfleet High School in Stony Creek, and we had an option if you got a certain mark in English, you could take this stream, which was essentially a creative writing stream. Yeah, and so through that, I mean, I wrote all sorts of things. Yes, me and a friend and I, we co-wrote a play and then performed it as part of the drama festival at school. But it was poetry, it was, you know, journalism. It was a very special opportunity to, you know, really think about different creative projects and how you could make them successful.
Yeah. Well, you know, given the arc of your career into all kinds of aspects, not just being the artist per se, but setting up the production, supporting things, helping people put things together, including exhibitions and so on, I'm surprised that you began on the stage as the actor. Did you ever direct a play when you were young? Did you ever produce one?
Probably, yes, just the one that I wrote, but that was it in terms of directing. Other than that, it was acting only. And I did some of that through university too.
Okay, really interesting. Yeah. Where did you go to university?
I went to U of T, University of Toronto, Trinity College. Yeah, and certainly the arts were important there. In first year, the Trinity College Dramatic Society did a production of Camelot, and I was too shy to audition, but I did knit chainmail for the production.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Lord, how on earth would a person even begin to knit chainmail?
Yeah.
We're using yarn, I presume, yeah, not like metal.
Yeah, and using like thick yarn, right? So that the garter stitch from a distance I think they spray painted it and it looked like chainmail from a distance.
That is really cool. Yeah, you really seem to come at things from all around. You know, it's really quite interesting. Now, it seems to me that you eventually settled on graphic design as a way to earn a living as an artist. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that would be fair to say. I went back to school 5 years ago to study graphic design. I went up to Mohawk College. I was ready for a career change. And I did it because I really wanted to have more creativity in my daily life. And that seemed, and it was an area that had always been of interest. I studied art history. You know, that's what my bachelor's and master's degrees are in. And always loved graphic design. So I thought, let's do that.
You must have worked with Life Peng.
Yes, absolutely.
Isn't he amazing?
Great teacher.
Oh my gosh, he is wonderful. I think he's such a fascinating person, and I love his blog. For our Artways listeners, if you've never looked up Life Peng's blog, Today's Inspiration, you will just be amazed by it. And you don't have to be an artist to get interested in. He covers all kinds of popular art. Fascinating. Okay, so Jennifer Kay, you are a graphic designer. Like, how much today of your time would you say is spent on actually creating art yourself?
Well, certainly more than ever before. But I think also I'm not working full time right now. So I have more time available to devote. Yeah. And so I'm doing design for a couple of different projects, also doing more writing. So having more time available, you know, less time in the workplace and more time for me has been really beneficial.
Great. The old work-life balance. Yeah. Is that because of COVID? Is that directly related to COVID?
No, it just happens to coincide with COVID. Okay. So, you know, I went from having more time to do things I was interested in to, you know, really, as all of us, like having nothing else to do.
Right. What kind of writing are you doing right now?
Well, right now I'm very interested in the local geology of this area and the Niagara Escarpment especially. And I realized that even though I've, you know, spent most of my life in close proximity to the escarpment, I've actually walked very little of the Bruce Trail through Hamilton. So I've set myself a project of walking the Bruce Trail from in Hamilton only, from end to end. And I'm doing some writing about that as I go.
That's interesting. A few weeks ago, I had Marg Heidebrecht on the show. She used to teach up at Mohawk herself. And she just finished a book about walking the Bruce Trail.
Oh, and did she?
Yes, she did. It's very interesting. So it's Marg Heidebrecht, and you could look her up. But this is kind of a theme that people are discovering. And we are lucky to live where we do so that we have access to these trails.
Yeah, we're very, very fortunate. And I actually grew up about 5 minutes from the Devil's Punch Bowl. But when you're growing up, you take these things for granted.
Yeah.
So now I have a bit more time and perspective to appreciate them.
Yeah, absolutely the case for everybody, I think. Okay, so it's kind of rare on Art Waves for us to have an artist who specializes in the business and the promotional aspects of the arts. Would you say that describes what you have done in your practice?
Yes and no. There's a part of me that, you know, the words business and promotion, I bristle at those a little bit. I think of myself as sort of a someone who's more interested in the big picture. So I would say that I understand the arts sector very well. I understand how it works. I understand how the different components, you know, it's like an ecosystem, and I understand how the different components work together. So my interest is in promoting the arts, but at a macro level, right? Building support, building strength, you know, not so much the sort of small promotion focused on individual events or that sort of thing.
Not small promotion.
Not as much. I mean, not to say that I don't do that, but I would say that it's more that sort of big picture appreciation, and then helping organizations and individuals to understand how they can work within that larger system.
I see. And this is the consulting that you do. You help bring groups together and fit people together.
Yes. Yeah, I would say that's accurate. I used to say I worked for a chunk of time at the City of Hamilton. I was the manager of arts and events there. You know, so that was the public art program, the arts awards, you know, things like that. And I always used to say that I saw a big part of my job as being a translator between the arts community and the municipality. You know, I could kind of speak both languages and did my best to try and make the two things connect.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense because, yeah, most artists really haven't got a great business head, I have to say. You know, that's certainly true of me, but it's true of most of the people that I speak to as well. So what you understand, grasp, are able to do is immensely valuable to the city and to artists. I kind of want, maybe this is a good place for me to ask you about, what do you think the job of art is in a society? What does it do for a society?
That's such a big question.
Well, why bother helping artists to connect to the government? Why, you know, to the...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, because I think the arts... I hesitate. The word that comes to mind is that they enrich our lives, but enrich makes it sound a bit like it's maybe something optional, which I think it isn't. I mean, I think we actually need to have, as individuals, we need to have outlets for creative expression and creative appreciation. But I also think as societies, we need to have some shared sense of culture. And it should be, you know, it shouldn't be ossified, or, you know, it shouldn't be a very set sense of culture. It needs to be flexible and fluid and ever changing. But I think as societies, if we don't have that, I think we're very much
poorer.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, Jennifer Kay, your most recent exhibition, I think, was, at least according to we've gotten delayed in this, so maybe something else has come up since, but a recent exhibition of yours was at Hamilton's wonderful Museum of Steam and Technology, mm-hmm. and it involved 3D photography and the history of machine art. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. While I was studying graphic design, you know, part of that is studying photography, and I had the opportunity to learn how to take 3D photographs, which, like with just a regular camera. Yeah, which is probably easier than you might think. You know, it sounds like it would be something that's technically very challenging, and yet it's actually relatively straightforward, and it's fun. Like, who doesn't like putting on 3D glasses, right? And looking at 3D images. I mean, we all love doing that. And the Steam Museum is one of my favorite places ever. Anyone who hasn't been must go. I think they've reopened, but I don't know the details around that. So, you know, just these beautiful Victorian machines that are lovely in their intricacy and their ingenuity and the, you know, their sort of works of art in and of themselves, even though they're practical objects.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I thought, well, you know, that really, and it really lends itself to 3D photography because it's also a very sort of planar place, right? There's planes of machinery and planes of space. Anyway, so I talked to the curator there and said I would love to do a photography project, and they were interested in showing that. So it was wonderful. I got to spend lots of time there and, you know, in the sort of beautiful surroundings and exhibited these photographs.
Did you get to go where the public doesn't get to go?
Yes. Yes, I hope I'm not getting anyone into trouble, but yes, I did.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that always frustrates me. If I go to a cathedral or something, I'm always really wanting to get to go up in the dome or something, because I know it's possible. But you can't usually do these things, but it must be a remarkable thing to do. And during the COVID shutdown, I keep thinking about the caretakers of these places and how they're in there all by themselves. And it must be magic, you know? They just have so much time there to truly explore in peace. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't normally get to, so.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
That sounds absolutely fascinating. Now, do you know Sean Selway of Pragmata Historic Machine Conservation?
I didn't until you sort of gave me a heads up around that. So I've, of course, gone on the website and checked them out. And yeah, I mean, and they've done work at the Steam Museum. It's very interesting what they do.
Yeah, it really is. He was my guest on March 1st of this year. And as I was, you know, looking at what you do, I just couldn't help but think, wow. And of course, Hamilton is a perfect place for people who are interested in the conservancy of machines, of old machines.
Absolutely. And there's such a long, you know, 100 years or so history of a fascination with machines from an artistic standpoint that I think is also very interesting, right? So the 3D photography is kind of the, you know, the interesting technological approach. But, you know, if you go back to the early 20th century and the futurists and the dadaists and this use of the machine, first of all, as sort of a metaphorical thing to, you know, in a lot of cases to critique modern society, but then increasingly into the 20s and the 30s, you know, artists and experimental filmmakers who are using machine imagery and machine iconography as a way of expressing their admiration for society. So anyway, it's there's an interesting thread of this through the history of art.
Well, it is a fascinating kind of niche in art that I hadn't been very aware of before I had Sean Selway on, but of course it makes perfect sense. Now, Jennifer Kay, you help groups of all kinds, artists collectives, churches, cancer resource centers, children's aid societies, etc. You help groups of all kinds. What kinds of services are you able to provide for these groups, and how would they contact you if they wanted your help?
So I would say there's two different kinds of services. One is design and communications, right? So for example, with the Wellwood Cancer Resource Center, as a volunteer, I do their design work for their annual fundraising run. So that's, you know, that's everything from branding, design, you know, it could be putting together a social media communications plan, like it's that kind of stuff. But then the other part would be sort of more project management or consulting. So for example, I worked with the Hamilton Arts Council and with the City of Hamilton Arts Advisory Commission to put together a project plan for the Building Cultural Legacies project, which has now come to fruition, which is lovely to see.
So
it's kind of broad, and sometimes I have trouble sort of, you know, that you talk about someone's elevator speech, you know, what would you say to somebody in the 15 seconds you have with them in an elevator to pitch yourself? And I have trouble with the 15 second thing.
And I imagine most people do, but what you offer is a wider forum for people to feel out what it is that they need to say, what is the heart of what they're trying to do. Am I right?
Yeah, you know what? I think that's a great way to put it, actually. I think something that I'm good at is synthesizing information and clarity around expressions. So I think sometimes when groups or individuals know there's something that they want to achieve, I can help work with them to articulate it and get them on their way.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of answering another question that I had in a way, because I suspect all of that would come into this. You even help people with that most daunting of all tasks for artists and writers and groups, which is grant proposals. People just, oh, they just despair because it's such a hairy thing to have to do. Can you talk about a secret to writing an effective grant proposal? Is there one?
There isn't one, but I would say that, so I've written grant proposals, but I've also created grant programs, adjudicated grant applications. Like, again, I've seen the grant process from sort of all the different perspectives. So what I would say is that the most effective grant proposals are the ones that have a certain amount of clarity about what it is that they're trying to accomplish. You know, it doesn't have to be grandiose and it doesn't have to be complex, but if you can articulate it fairly clearly, and if you can make sure that your project budget actually, you know, is in alignment with what you've described, that goes a long way. And it sounds like, it to me, it sounds so rudimentary. Oh, well, if you're applying for a grant, you need to know what you're applying for. But it's surprising how often that's a challenge, and you can read it in the grant proposal. It's a problem of the system to some extent, right? You know, you have to write to get money to do things. You have to write grant proposals. And certainly I've been in the position too of, you know, knowing I need to get the money, but maybe not being 100% sure of what I'm going to do with it. And that usually comes through pretty clearly.
Yeah. And I think often artists do kind of feel their way through to what it is that they sense they want to do. They don't know, you know, at the beginning, maybe.
Right.
Okay, well, let me just remind our listeners, if you've just tuned in, you're with Art Waves tonight on 101.5 The Hawk. I am Bernadette Rule, and my guest tonight is Jennifer Kay. So Jennifer Kay, do you have any hobbies or pastimes that don't involve the arts?
I do. I do. I enjoy hiking and, you know, sort of outdoors stuff. But I have a real interest in science, and as an amateur with no particular training. So, for example, I mentioned earlier, I have this real interest in geology, which actually I would say was sort of sparked last year when I took a trip to Newfoundland, which is a geographically a very rich area, you know, fossils. And like, I had no idea that a part of Newfoundland, the part that St. John's is on, the Avalon Peninsula, is actually land from the old African continent, you know, and like, it's fascinating. And none of us really know the histories of the places we live. Like here, you know, we have the escarpment going through Hamilton. How many of us really sort of understand exactly what that is and how it got there? And, you know, so I've been doing some reading on that. I find it really interesting.
Yes, John Terpstra is really good on that subject. Have you come across his books, Falling Into Place?
Yes, yeah. I have. I enjoy his work. Yeah, I also enjoyed Daniel Coleman's yard work too. Also, you know, sort of again looking at place, and but looking at it, peeling back the layers of the onion.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to say, like, you talk about Newfoundland having broken off from the African continent, and I think part of it also broke off of Ireland. And if you look at the world as a puzzle, really, and the land masses, you know, you can kind of see how they might have fitted together at one time. And they, you know, it always amazed me a few years back when there was that terrible earthquake and tsunami in Japan, and they said it moved 8 feet to the west. The actual archipelago of Japan moved 8 feet to the west. That kind of freaked me out.
Yeah, that's a huge amount of motion, you know, for a short period of time.
Yes, I know.
I know. It's really quite fascinating. You know, I think there's an interest, I haven't figured it out, but there's an interesting project in working with people with their local geologies and, you know, trying to, so for example, in Newfoundland on Fogo Island, right? Fogo Island has the big inn, the Fogo Island Inn, and they have a very, very active arts program where they bring people in to do residencies, and they have an exhibition program. Also on the island is a geological museum, and they bring in geologists in residence over the summer. And I think there's lots of opportunity for those geologists and the artists to be working together, using the geology of Fogo as a starting point. But I mean, everywhere has its own unique geology. So I think there's lots of potential there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think figuring out a sense of place is important to people who have been as peripatetic as certainly the European-based cultures in North America have been. You know, once they uprooted from those places they had been for so long, we haven't had a very strongly developed sense of place, nor an appreciation for where we are. So I think this is something whose time has come for sure.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Okay, so Jennifer Kay, you did your first degrees in art history, as you said, and you are a working artist. Can you talk about some of your favorite artists?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So I'm drawn to the early 20th century European period. You know, there's a lot of the artwork that was being created then to me is of interest. It just seemed to be such an interesting time with the growth of ideas. So for example, you know, the work that was happening in science around the fourth dimension and space-time and led by Einstein. But, you know, this stuff was in the air, as they say. And you can see how at that time there was a real sort of porousness, or porosity, I guess is the right word, between the different disciplines, and a real cross-fertilization. So I find a lot of what was happening at that time very interesting. Favorite artist would be Picasso.
Okay.
And it's so, most of what he created was as close to perfection as you can get, I think. And yet he's also super problematic because he was a big jerk and, you know, and not nice to women.
No.
You know, and so a problematic person, but in terms of the artwork he created, if I could have any artwork in the world on my wall, it would be by Picasso, a cubist dry point etching.
And that's very specific. A cubist dry point etching.
They're so beautiful. They're so beautiful, I think.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, the point you raised, that he was a jerk. He was not a terribly, you wouldn't have liked him if you met him.
No.
And unfortunately, I feel that that is the case with so many great artists of all kinds. And what do you make of that? Like, I personally have always resented the fact that people seem to believe that you have to be troubled, tortured, dark and difficult in order to create anything worthwhile. I hate that concept.
I do too.
So what do you make of the fact that so much of the really good stuff does seem to come from jerks?
That's a great question. Yeah. Well, I think some of it is, you know, the fact that the jerks stand out, right? So part of it is just the vagaries of history.
Who gets attention?
Yeah, the whole nice guys finish last kind of problem. But I agree with you. I hate that idea that in order to be an effective artist, you have to have darkness and be unhappy. And like, it's just not true. It's just totally not true. But it's one of those myths that we love to indulge.
And I do think sometimes artists use it to indulge. They think, oh, well, you know, I've got to womanize. I've got to drink like a fish and break.
it's a hard burden, but someone's got to do it.
Yeah, it is really sad.
I agree.
Such a common thing. Yeah. But we can always talk about your wonderful husband, Leslie Sasaki.
Yeah. Yes,
you can. He seems to be a great example of the exact opposite. A truly decent human being who creates brilliant art.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, he's, you know, he's got his dark corners like we all do.
Don't tell me.
No, I won't. Nothing particularly awful. Just your garden variety dark stuff.
Of course.
But he's a great example of that. He's a good person, a kind person, and not tortured.
No, he's an idealist, it seemed to me when I had him on the program, but my children always have teased me about seeming to need heroes. And they're like, Mom, you got to drop that, you know, but I am an idealist. And I do get so disappointed when somebody that I've put on a pedestal falls off, and so many people are falling off these days that it's shocking. Yeah. But it's probably just good to realize that everybody is a mixture, a blend.
Well, that's right. I mean, there are some people who are, you know, particularly terrible, but yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, we're all a blend, and it's, we have to be, it's such a difficult question. You know, you don't want to condone or romanticize bad behavior, but at the same time, you know, you do have to accept that it's part of the human condition. It's a pretty tricky thing. I have a big thing about movies that present us with these alcoholic, tortured men that we're supposed to forgive and find lovable. For me, the best recent example is the remake of A Star Is Born. And, you know, we're supposed to, even though Bradley Cooper is just an asshole, we're still supposed to, at the end, think well of him and recognize that, you know, he couldn't help himself. And that's crap.
Yes, crap. It drives me crazy, this absolute, the excuses that we make for people. But it is something that people seem to love, is the tortured figure, the character who can't help it, but, you know, has somewhere hidden in there this gleam. And women are suckers for trying to bring that stuff out and aligning to difficult men on because of it, you know.
Agreed.
The whole Beauty and the Beast thing is really overdone. And and A Star Is Born, how many times has that movie been made? You know, that'll tell you right there.
Exactly, 4 times.
Think of how much money and time and effort have been poured into that stupid story.
Oh, I found a kindred soul on the Star Is Born issue. I'm very excited about that.
I have to admit, I didn't see it because I didn't want to see it. I got done there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, Jennifer Kay. So do you have any advice for artists or would-be artists or people who are struggling to figure out whether they can possibly make a life in art?
Yeah, that's a hard question, because it's not, you know, it's something that I never felt I could do, is make a life in art by doing my own art. That was something that always seemed like it was for other people to do somehow. And, you know, and I think I'm trying to kind of rectify that. But yeah, you know, I would say that even if you're not able to make a living from your own art, try to find something that you can do that will still build your skills, right? So, you know, I think of my husband, Les, right, who has spent his life as an art teacher at the university and college level. You know, that's not doing your own artwork. And, you know, I saw firsthand how hard it was for Les to get to the studio when he was teaching 150 kids a term and so on. But I'm sure he would agree with this, that he learned skills in the process of doing that have been valuable for him to apply in his creating his own artwork. So, you know, I would say if it's, you know, if you're looking to write the great Canadian novel, do some journalism, whether it's on a volunteer basis or, you know, preferably paid, right? Like, get writing. It may not be ideally what you would want to be writing, but you're going to be building your skills and your credibility so that when the time is right for you to pursue your own artistic projects, you're going to be in a better position.
Right. Good advice. Have you yourself been a teacher?
Not by profession. I mean, I've taught courses here and there, and one of my very early roles, I was a docent at the Art Gallery of Ontario. So taking people on tours, doing that kind of thing. And then I was also the head of education at the Art Gallery of Hamilton in the 1990s. So, you know, I have a real interest in how the general public interacts with the arts, but I haven't been a teacher per se.
Okay. Do you think that art can be taught, that artists can become artists because they've been taught, or do they have to be born as artists? What do you think?
I think that artists can be taught. I think one of the problems that a lot of people encounter is that there are some very narrowly defined outlets for creativity. You know, if you're an artist, you have to be able to draw and paint. If you're we tend to really focus on some of the traditional ways of being artists. And yet there are as many different ways to be an artist as there are different ways to be in the world, right? But I think that a lot of times the paths seem very, very narrow. And so I think that, you know, anybody can take a creative mind, you know, or like a curious mind, you know, someone with curiosity can take what they're good at and be creative with it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, each of us is born with a huge variety of talents and skills, and some of which don't ever get developed. Okay, good. Now, I asked you earlier how people could get a hold of you if they wanted your help. I don't know if you ever gave us a website or a contact information.
No, but I can. Yeah, my website's in development, so it's been in development for a while. But my email address is jj.kaye100@gmail.com.
Okay, and you don't mind people contacting you there for projects or help?
Yeah, that's totally fine.
That's great. I love the website in development. That's okay, so do you have any upcoming exhibitions or projects where people can see your work?
Yes. So I've done the graphic design and exhibition design for a project that is on display at the Steam Museum. The project's called The Power of Design. And it's a look at the history of electric power in Hamilton with a particular lens of looking at the architectural legacy. So substations that were around at the early 20th century, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. Those substations are beautiful.
They're gorgeous. A lot of them are really gorgeous, you know, from a time when public works were treated as a thing of beauty as well as a thing of practicality. So there's a local photographer named Francis Fougere who's taken photographs of these substations, and they're the focus of the exhibition. But there's also interpretive materials and so on. And so I've been a member of the project team for that, which has been a lot of fun.
Okay, wonderful.
And I think the Steam Museum reopening, it's in their woodshed space, which is beside the actual pump house. And I think with them reopening, that is about to become available to the public. It was supposed to open to the public a week after the COVID lockdown started.
Yeah, so much got scuttled with that.
Yes.
Amazing. But as we've said in this interview, other things have blossomed, been allowed to blossom, you know, in the sciences that have been created by COVID. So it's good. Anything else you're working on at the present time that people will be able to see?
Not right now. As I said, I'm doing some writing about the escarpment and the, you know, and its role in Hamilton, but I don't know yet what's going to happen with that. Might end up on the website when it's no longer in development.
Okay. Or it might become a book, perhaps, or you think, or a blog, or...
Absolutely. I would like it to sort of reach an audience, a local audience. So I'll be looking at different ways to do that.
Okay. Well, yeah, I would love to see more of your work. I'd love to see more of your graphic design too. You know, if, have you ever had an exhibition of your graphic design?
I have not, no. But it's, you know, I have something else I had, you know, you asked about interests that aren't arts related. I have a real interest in maps and am hoping to spend some time learning the mapping software that I have so that I can start to do some creative things with maps.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. There's another project that I may pursue to completion. So when COVID first hit, I started writing, I called them COVID haikus. And it was just purely a way of processing for me what was happening. But I was putting them on Facebook and encouraging other people to also do haikus. So from the first month of the COVID lockdown, I have about 100 haikus that people have written. And I would love to put that into an illustrated book. And it would just be, I mean, they're not written by anybody except the people in my circle, but they're this interesting, when you look at them, it's just this interesting little snapshot of the time before we really knew what COVID meant, but we were getting used to the fact that dog parks were closed and, you know, it was just, anyway, they're quite wonderful. And
I'm sure they are. I love the haiku format. That's great.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you would be the illustrator.
Yeah. Yeah. I would create the book. And I have been thinking it might be interesting to do sort of like a flip book, you know, when you flip the pages and things move. I'm thinking it might lend itself to that. So.
Oh, nice. Nice idea. Yeah. Oh, I love those.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, unfortunately, Jennifer Kay, it is time for me to ask you my last question, which is, what piece of music have you chosen for me to play tonight to close Art Waves, and why that one?
Okay. So I have chosen a piece of music by the Pixies. The Pixies is my all-time favorite band. They were sort of a post-punk indie 1980s, early 90s band. And the song I've chosen is Monkey Gone to Heaven. And the reason I've chosen that is because one of my COVID projects is to learn to play the bass guitar. So I've got a bass guitar, I've been taking some lessons, and there's a great bass line in this song that I have learned how to play. So...
Maybe you should do a live version for us to close the program.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But so that's why I chose it.
Okay, that sounds like a lot of fun. Well, I cannot thank you enough, Jennifer Kay, for agreeing to be my guest on Art Waves tonight. It's been wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you, Bernadette. It's been a lot of fun to think about putting all of this stuff into some sort of context that I could then share with you. It's been a great experience.
Oh, wonderful. I'm so glad. So Art Waves listeners, we're going to close tonight's program with Jennifer Kay's very interesting music pick, Monkey Gone to Heaven by the Pixies. And we are very grateful that you could join us tonight. As always, remember that you can get all our podcasts of our programs at archive.org/details/artwaves. And I hope you can join me next week at 7 o'clock on 101.5 The Hawk for another interesting conversation with another Hamilton artist. And until then, this is Bernadette Rule wishing you a good night on the shores of Lake Ontario.
There was a guy.